Jim Crow create for the Black community was an access to water issue. So people could not easily and readily access pools and water spaces that were safe and clean. So that, therefore, that resulted in families who didn't get that skill set to pass it to generations. And it then created this fear, which then led to drowning.
Welcome to the Ripples of Radical Generosity podcast by Coralis, a global community of women and non-binary people making real progress on the world's to-do list. Together, we're transforming the world to become more equitable and sustainable.
Hi, I'm MJ Ryan. I am one of the Coralis development guides, and I am so excited to be here today with Trish Miller of Swim Kids and to have a conversation about what she's doing, why it really matters, and what her experience so far has been like as a new venture in the Coralis community. So welcome, Trish. So happy to be talking with you.
Yay. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
All right. So first of all, tell us about what Swim Kids is, and then we'll talk about why it matters so much.
Yeah. So, first, just thank you for the opportunity to be here to talk about this work that we do. Swim Kids prides itself on introducing people to the freedom of swimming. We focus on communities that have the highest rates of drownings. Those tend to be Black and Brown communities, and we provide them with the skills to be safe in and around the water with instruction, certifications, and water safety programming.
Yeah. And I used to be a swimming instructor when I was a teenager and in my 20s. So this is very near and dear to my heart, but especially because this is actually a racial justice issue, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about that. And why has there been this history, which is in the United States, of this being an underserved community?
Yeah. Certain parts of the our past and history we want to not talk about. However, those items and cultural events that happen still affect generations today. And unfortunately, one of those being Jim Crow and many of those other laws that kept communities from enjoying certain activities. And what it did create for the Black community was an access to water issue. So people could not easily and readily access pools and water spaces that were safe and clean. So that, therefore, that resulted in families who didn't get that skill set to pass it to generations. And it then created this fear, which then led to drownings. And then there's other events that happened in water, too, that have caused great fear and made people of color and Black people specifically feel that this sport and this activity isn't for them, and creates a lot of the stereotypes that we have around the water today, which is, why the work that we're doing exists to dispel those stereotypes.
Yeah, exactly. And Lauren, the other development guy, was telling me something I didn't know, which was when Brown versus the Board of Education legally stopped segregation and desegregation became the law of the land, all these communities shut their community pools.
Yeah.
I was like so shocked and started having private pools. And that's why there's so many private pools in all these suburban places. So the access really continued on to be a problem, even supposedly after the law changed. So that's, I'm just horrified. I'm so grateful for what you're doing. Tell me what happened for you that you decided to do this? Because you used to work, you told me, for the CDC.
I did. So my background is public health. So I intimately study the statistics and data around this work. So the foundation of the work that we do is around the literature and is around the statistics. And when I was younger, I was a teenager and went on a college trip and found myself in a pool with some friends and they were going to teach me how to swim. I grew up near the ocean front. So I guess the assumption is that I would know how to swim. But my parents grew up through that Jim Crow era. So my mother never learned how to swim, has a fear of the water. Also has colorism issues. Like, she just has a whole bucket of stuff that she passed along to me as the only girl. And so I was just kept away from the water. So I didn't know how to navigate the space at all. And had some girlfriends when I was late teen to teach me how to swim. And I really didn't know what I didn't know. And they hyped me up. I thought I was ready. And I jumped into 12 feet of water and learned very quickly. I did not know how to float. I didn't know how to tread. And I jumped in, went back up, and did not know how to stay up. And that is legit one of the scariest experiences that I still remember. Thankfully, they weren't very far from the pool platform and were able to jump in and get me out. But it took me decades from there to get back in the water and actually learn how to swim. So it really put a deep-rooted fear in me that even though I had my own children, I was determined not to pass that along to them. But it still did affect activities that we did together. So my children were learning how to swim, but I wouldn't get in the water with them. And then I started to feel like, okay, if something were to happen to them, I wouldn't be able to get to them safely. And I don't keep them from the space. So I made a commitment to learn. And I celebrated my first lap actually 2 years after I opened Swim Kit. So I took lessons with my students to make sure that I got that skill. So it was as vulnerable as I could be.
That's fantastic. So there you were working in public health. And what made you decide to become an entrepreneur? What was that moment?
Yeah. So I was, in public health, you do very mission-driven work. And I did a lot of beautiful work that were in communities that I wasn't necessarily connected to, but it was still beautiful work. And I have always had a bug of being an entrepreneur. I was that kid in school that sold things out of a locker and all this kind of stuff. So I knew that eventually I wanted to have my own business of some sort. But as I grew in my career, professionally, I wanted to do work that mattered to me. So it wasn't just selling a widget. It was work that I was connected to. And so I actually did a project while I was getting one of my graduate degrees, and it was about swimming. And that really sparked this kind of thinking of like, wait, I remember this experience that I had, and I started to dig into those stats. And then I was like, I'm going to do something about it. And because I saw that the experience that I had and statistics showed that my experience wasn't very unique. And many people, unfortunately, it had a similar engagement with the water. And so I wrote a very small grant. We partnered with a local elementary school and one of our city pools. And we transported those students during the school day to test would early intervention allow them to gain the skill and allow them to be safe in the water.
And so now, how fast forward, how many years, and how has Swim Kids grown? So you're in Atlanta, which is a big city. Yes. So there's probably lots of pools. So tell me what's happened since then.
Yes. So 7 years later, time flies. 7 years later, we celebrate over 1,000 students in our waters a week. We started with 10, and actually my children and a neighbor as swimming instructors. And so now our team tops 40 people, and we've grown beautifully in terms of locations and just the impact and access that we now can offer the community. I said that our work is rooted in the literature as to why certain communities have an access issue. The three reasons is the cost of lessons, yep, the locations of the pool, so the access to the water, and then hair maintenance. And so in me doing that study, I sought to solve all three of those issues and to create whether product or service to address all three and to break those barriers down and allow all communities to enjoy this space.
I just love that you figured out what was preventing people from joining and then solve for those problems. So tell me how you dealt with each one of those factors.
Yeah. So in terms of access to water, we are very intentional on where we locate our pools. And now we do partner with communities and we do lease space, but we're very intentional as to where that water is and what communities we want to reach there. And once we are in those communities, our marketing efforts and outreach efforts are to invite people into the space. So we didn't build it and they will come. We actually actively recruit families into our waters. So then the cost side of that is about 40% of our work is scholarship based, which is subsidized by great donors and partners that we have in this space. And so for we actually do not have an income kind of either qualification or cap. We use our scholarship work to introduce people to the space and to provide an opportunity that maybe otherwise they wouldn't have done. And so about 40% of our work is scholarship to address that cost issue. The third is we have a product company that is seeking to create the very first ever fully waterproof swimming cap.
Yay.
That has been a labor of love. Creating your own product from scratch is not easy.
Yep.
And we're going through the patent process now, which has also been a labor of love. So I'm hoping we're close to the end. We've gotten a few rejections and have done a few responses, but it really is all to make sure that we've addressed all of those barriers in hair. Including me, that's something that I experience in when I want to swim and at, you know, what time of day, what time of the month, all of those things really do make me think about getting in the water. We want to erase that. We don't want that to be a thought for people.
That's so great. And you and I were talking yesterday, actually, on our development guide call about how you do the outreach marketing efforts that you do. So entrepreneurs, anyone who's an entrepreneur, listen in, because Trish does something very non-traditional at this moment, but it's actually going back traditional. So tell us the marketing stuff that you do.
MJ, we are old school. So I know there's lots of, you know, great efforts out there and we do employ some of those, but probably our top way that we reach communities are vinyl-based billboards and direct mail marketing. You know, we do have some ads and all that kind of stuff on social media. But the most widely seen pieces of our work are our billboards and our direct marketing pieces.
So what you're saying is you send out flyers to people in the community to say, we're having lessons, there's camp, like that. And then you, as you're driving down your kids to school every day, you see the billboard. That is old school. And you told me it's cheaper than I thought, right? It's not as
Absolutely. So it depends on your city, of course, and you know your market and all of that. But you can get a very well-positioned billboard for around $1,500 a month. And it really just is a matter of you'll see a billboard with a phone number up there, call them, and it'll give you some space. And typically you can sign multi-year contracts or a few months, you know, if you want to, depending on the location. Once I get it, I'm going to keep it. So I'll sign multi-year contracts.
Yours works.
Mine is working. So
that's so good.
But then with that, we will replace the vinyls maybe, you know, once a year or once every other year or something like that. But other than that, that's what we do. That's what gives
us the
stability we need.
That's so great. Okay. So you've been in the Corliss community just like a month, not even, right? It's sort of like a month. So tell me what it's been like for you to be part of this, to be a selected venture for 2024. What's it been like so far?
Oh man, it's been awesome. I mean, even you just said, like, we had our call, you know, you and I had a call yesterday, and you know, the type of business owner I am is I don't labor over things. So if things make sense and I have the capacity to get them done, I do it and get it done. And you and I talked about some strategies that we needed to do in my business. And, you know, and I moved quickly on those. I was fortunate enough to have my call today with the CFO, a volunteer.
Yeah, how is that? One of the things that the ventures get is a session with our venture CFO, Cindy Warner Beck, who helps you with whatever you want in terms of your finances. So what was that like for you today?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, we were able, you know, I was able to share some of my pain points around my financials with her. She was already very familiar about our work too. So that was helpful and, you know, asked some key questions. But one of the things that, she was able to help me with, because I do have a background in business. However, I don't have the capacity to do the things that I want and need to do. So a lot of the analysis that I'm looking to have from reports and things, you know, it's just like, who does that? Like, what is that type of person? It's not a bookkeeper. It's not accountant. Like, who is that person? And so we were just talking about ways to either contract out that type of service or, you know, to get me those things that I need to be able to properly plan and project so that we can scale and grow. But even that, we identify the need to uncouple our accountant and our bookkeeper just so that I'm getting timely reports and, you know, able to get budgets that we can then my managers can use to make decisions too. So it was super helpful. And she's so knowledgeable. So I couldn't wait for that call. Like I was asking, like, when are we having that one? When? And as soon as that came out, I was like quick on it. So yeah, that was definitely a great one for me.
Fantastic. Any other impressions for you from the first so far in being in our community?
Yeah, I mean, it truly is a community. Like I've definitely been in other groups and you know, whether accelerators or fellowships and things like that. And, you know, people use that word community, but to experience community is a different thing. So I will say community as a verb with Corral. It's like it's legit, the support and the true caring that people have already demonstrated who do not know me, Trish, as a person, but care enough. And those that have reached out even to offer their support and help hasn't been anything that I've experienced in any other way. I'm looking forward to the summit. I just feel like it's going to be, you know, an in-person verb of community. So I'm looking forward to those ways to continue to engage and even just the other ventures to just hear all of the cool things that they're doing. And they're also diverse in terms of what their business is. And so it just has presented such a great opportunity for us all to share and learn from each other and, you know, to really, really offer, because people have already given me contacts and, you know, and I've been able to share, you know, contacts and things with them. So it truly is, you know, one of those experiences that I've had where people are, they mean what they say and they are truly there to support you and help you. So it's been great. I still feel blessed to be a part of it.
Oh, that's great. And somebody from our community encouraged you to apply, didn't they?
Yes. So I will say my sister in entrepreneurship, Terry Michelle Bradley, who we actually met at another fellowship, which is where both of our, her business is more mature than mine. And I started my business with that fellowship where she and I met, and she and I have been tight ever since. Actually was talking to her on the way here. So Terry and I legit talk every single day about multiple things. And, you know, our children call each other aunts and stuff. So so she went through the group and just felt that it would be a perfect fit for me. And I was able to go to an in-person session, I guess, that was held here in Atlanta, and met many of the team there. And I was just like, I just need this. I need this. Okay. And I was so glad. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to pick a swim school. Like of all these, you know, I'm listening to the people who were there and they're like, you know, I am a, you know, rocket scientist and I am actually a brain surgeon. Like it just felt, it seemed like everybody was just so cool and doing all these fun and just interesting things. And, you know, and I was just like, I'm gonna put it out there. And, you know, we really need this. Trish personally needs this, but we'll see. And when I got the first round, I was like, oh, that's cute. You know, surely though, I will not make like all of these applicants that they have. There's no way they're gonna whittle that down to picking me a swim school. And I got the call from Donna King and I was just like, wow, like, okay.
I just need to say without revealing any confidential thing, people loved you and love what you're doing. it was quite evident from the selection process.
Awesome. Thank you. I really do appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. So anything you have an ask for the community, anyone listening, is there something specific that anyone could hear and go, oh, wow.
Heck yeah. I have an ask and a challenge. Boop, boop, boop. So my first, my ask is, we are oftentimes looking for, one of our scale strategies is to renovate pools that are down or need repair or things like that. So if you are in a community and you know that the pool needs repair, And that way, and it's not open or something like that, we would love to connect, and we would love
That's in Georgia or Atlanta, or like, what's the area?
In the land. The land. We are ready to scale. So wherever you are on the globe, if you know of a pool that needs repair, please don't hesitate to send it to me. I would love to check that
part
out.
Tell us how people can do that. What's your contact info?
Please. You can email me at tmiller@swimkids, and it's spelled swemkids.com. You can reach me via LinkedIn, Trish P. Miller. Our social is @swimkids, as well as @swimschool, both spelled with an E. I'd love to talk with you about what you might find or anything like that. The challenge I have is the thing that you are on the fence about, that you are wondering whether or not you should do it. My challenge is for you to do the scary thing, to do it without having everything all figured out. Yep. Be vulnerable enough and open enough for the universe and whoever you believe in to guide your steps along the way.
Oh, I love that. Thanks, Trish. Appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. And I can't wait to just continue on with this process and you know, hopefully offer as much as I'm getting. So thank you just for this opportunity.
And I can't wait to see where you go and where you take this, because I believe for you, there's this no limit. So wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Thanks, MJ.
Thank you for listening to the Ripples of Radical Generosity podcast. Let us know what you thought of the episode and share this podcast with your friends. We invite you to join a global community of radically generous women and non-binary folks at www.coralis.world.